Okay, so start. So I'm Magnus. I'm working in Azure Core on the upstream team. In the upstream team, we work mostly on container-related open source technologies like Kubernetes, OCI, etc. But during the last year, we also worked on QEMU, and I want to talk a bit about the work that we did in this project. There's an audio issue.
I'll just try to increase the volume.
Can also try to speak louder, but that's fine.
Is it better?
1, 2, 3. One, two, three. It's better? Okay. So, yeah. First, maybe it makes sense to talk a bit about what QEMU accelerators are. So this is obviously a simplification, but I think it still makes sense to dumb down things a bit to provide context on what this feature is about. So an accelerator is essentially the term in QEMU that describes the interface of handing off work to the virtualization extensions in the CPU. And we see in this chart, like there's, if you look at the VM, it's some not really easy to describe what a VM actually is, but we can maybe use as a kind of working definition, there's a bunch of CPUs, like this indicated here that there's multiple of those entities and there's memory. And from the host, we map memory into the guest. It's kind of, we project it as guest memory, we contribute it to the guest, and we also assign certain holes to it. And these holes are then caught by the hypervisor, by the CPU as memory access traps, and then the VMM can do device emulation, for example. So there's more variants to I/O, but this is maybe the most common one. And you see, it's like the actual work in a VMM is actually this cycle. So you pass off work to the CPU, then it's hand it off to the hypervisor dispatches it then to the actual CPU, and under certain circumstances, then we'll end up, we end up getting a trap in the guest that the guest itself cannot handle, and we can yield back to the VMM, and the cycle continues. Also relevant is maybe a quick discussion about what the difference are between KVM and Microsoft Hypervisor, so that we call MSHV. They are both type 1 hypervisors, so they run on bare metal. But while KVM is kind of a part of the kernel and embedded in the host kernel, MSHV actually is a very thin layer. So I don't work on this part, but people tell me it's really very thin. And the host OS, what we call it, like it's really just a root partition. So it's a privileged guest. That's the main difference here. And when you look at this topology of how guests and hypervisors are organized, then there's also the option to run the root partition on the Microsoft hypervisor. And like in practice, this looks quite like KVM for a VMM. So there's an MSHV device that's controlled with IOCTLs and file descriptors. And this has been used for quite some time already in an AKS product called Pod Sandboxing, where Kata is used together with Cloud Hypervisor on Azure Linux kernel. So it wasn't part of the mainline Linux kernel yet. It was developed on a separate Azure Linux tree for quite some time. And it's using the Rust VMM integration that we just learned about. There is the option to run this on bare metal. There's the option to run it with a nested hypervisor or direct virtualization, which I'll describe in a later slide. But essentially, I think the only part that will be really relevant for the user, if you want to have a pure open source stack, is probably direct virtualization, because for the nested hypervisor, you would run Microsoft Hypervisor, as part of the UEFI protocol or something. The first parts of this have been upstreamed since 6.15, and incrementally more features are being added. The rationale behind QEMU, Linux, and MSHV is essentially that there's a lot of ask from customers to sandbox untrusted code. I mean, that was obvious for functions as a service, for example. It becomes a lot more critical when people actually start using those coding agents and they would create havoc on your system. So there's just a lot more untrusted code that we run in those circumstances. And MSHV provides us with, it's a Microsoft term, it's called like hostile multi-tenancy, basically means you cannot assume anything about the neighbor or the tenant being not doing something malicious. So this is really a hard isolation layer that is essentially also used to run Azure virtualization products. So customers will want to build those platforms with virtualization, and Linux is a very popular, it's the most popular workload on Azure when you look at the cores. And QEMU is just the most popular and comprehensive VMM with a lot of device backends, etc. So customers not only want to run cloud-native workloads, but maybe also more exotic ones. And eventually, QEMU is just also a building block for higher level virtualizations like Libvirt and Kubevirt. So if you want to use your custom hypervisor, you would have to build integrations for those. So this is why we ended up saying, we need to have an integration in QEMU. And what I mentioned earlier, so there's one option that this kind of virtualization technology gives us with Microsoft Hypervisor, that we can have a direct virtualization, is I think the marketing term that was coined before it was called hierarchical virtualization. Which is a bit opposite, but it just depends on where you look from the angle you look at it. Because for the customer, it's direct virtualization. From the virtualization perspective, from the stack, the technical stack, it's hierarchical. Because the basic idea is that if you have a root partition, then you don't need to actually use nested virtualization like this. You can instead just have a logical guest that is actually a sibling. Yeah, so you inherit the resources, and you're able as a customer to launch virtual machines in your virtual machine, but they're not nested. You don't need a hypervisor stack. They're actually just use resources from your allocated resources and create a sibling. And this enables certain use cases, for example, device assignment that is pretty hard before. So you can build virtualization solutions that have device assignments to your VM, and then you can assign it further to your virtual L2 guest. And it's also quite useful to avoid this kind of world switches that you have to do if you have layers of hypervisors. Then you have to, like the cycle that I showed in an earlier slide, this gets quite expensive if you have to do this kind of round trips over and over through multiple layers. So there's a perf tax that you pay when you do nested virtualization. And this one, or the goal is basically to avoid this. So this has been announced for some months now, and it should enter public preview soon. There's like several integration points in QEMU that we kind of followed the KVM example, or try to model. I think the MSHV driver is also written in a way that it's quite easy for VMMs to use the same facilities as KVM. So a lot of aspects are, I wouldn't say trivial to port, but it was like easy to identify where you the facilities should be implemented. Like, for example, we have the requirement in MSHV that we have to do MMIO instruction, decoding and instruction emulation. Because if, like in the earlier slide, I showed that if you trap into the VMM and you need to emulate, for example, an MIO access, then you have to have run those instructions in software, essentially. And a colleague basically looked at QEMU and saw that HVF, like the Apple hypervisor framework, already has something like this in place. So we were able to generalize this concept and extend it a bit to what we need to do. And this worked quite nicely, and I don't think it was very intrusive. We were also reusing all the acceleration parts. So this is basically the cycle that we've seen earlier. This is for real workloads, not super practical, because you want to avoid essentially to enter the VMM or to avoid VM exits and to avoid context switches, etc. And so there's a lot of optimization paths that have developed in KVM and QEMU to move the data plane outside of the VMM. Like we see here, the like one typical chain of events. So we see like the guest driver, virtIO driver, for example, writes to some MIO address. The CPU will detect there's like a page table violation, so it cannot map this. We have a VM exit, and then the kernel can look, is there maybe an event FD registered? And if that's the case, then we can, without the VM exit, we can essentially trigger in a different thread, in a dedicated thread, we can trigger the processing of this event in a device backend. And when the device backend is done, it can do the opposite. It can write to an RQFD that is registered again in the host kernel, and then it can inject an interrupt that then ends up in the guest interrupt service routine and completes the operation, for example. So in this picture, the VMM is not involved anymore, and this speeds up things tremendously. Also for VFIO, I think we are mostly able to use existing KVM abstractions and kind of call them accelerated IRQ. So we have to probably do some renaming there, but essentially it worked pretty well. So I have a few minutes still to talk a bit about the challenges that we're facing. So one of those challenges is VFIO. So there's existing VFIO support in Cloud Hypervisor. And it follows the same principle. You essentially have to set up a bridge between the VFIO device and the IRQ chip via EventFD, and then the interrupts get rerouted from the pass-through device to the guest properly. The problem that when we tried to hook this up, facing were that IRQs were dropped and wasn't really working until the devices reset itself. And then eventually, after some debugging, turned out that the sequences that the MSHV driver expects is just very subtly different than what KVM does. Yeah, so just the order of which component do you create first and how do you wire them up. The end result is the same, so we have to see how we address this. I think we have options for this kind of problem. We could have just a specific MSHV pass, which is maybe not desirable. We could adjust the driver behavior, maybe. I think I'm not super sure this works because KVM is maybe a bit less of a distributed system than MSHV is, because we have still this hypervisor outside the kernel. We could also maybe ask whether the QEMU behavior could be adjusted. So I just experimented around and moved the sequence around, and things worked for KVM and MSHV. So this is something that we have to address. Another challenge is migration or even live migration. So this is not initially obvious when you develop VMMs, because you make imperative commands to an API and VMs get created and a lot of magic happens in the background. When you want to take a VM or basically create a safe state of a VM and kind of reproduce it somewhere else, then you start to notice that there's a lot of implicit state even in x86 guests. And while you initially don't really have to care about a lot of them, like, I don't know, AVX 512 registers, etc., so those kind of things don't play a role, for example, in MIO emulation. But they play a role definitely when you want to migrate. Like the kernel will panic if, for example, the FPU registers are not really in the format they were before the context switch. And we need to then figure out how we capture, serialize, and round trip this whole state. So this has been quite challenging, because also QEMU has not just a blob serialization format. We actually want to introspect, for example, the FPU registers that are stored in XSafe or MSRs. And an additional problem is paravirtualized devices like the synthetic interrupt controller that is used on Microsoft Hypervisor and also by Linux guests. So yeah, there's a long tail of subtle, hard to reproduce issues, and I think it will be hard to tell when you're done with this. So the challenge really is here to define, like, a bar that you meet and then you can advance. This is like one of the challenges we have at the moment. And quickly, just what's upcoming. What we didn't have for a while was like proper CPU model support. So in QEMU you can tweak the CPU features extensively, and this wasn't really properly reflected in the guest so far. So this is something that we fixed. Device pass-through will come, the live migration, and also colleagues started to work on ARM. And I think that would be it from my side. Questions?
You quickly compared it to KVM in the beginning. There's another accelerator than QMU called VHPX, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does that one compare to? It's also for Windows.
Yeah. So there's the question about VHPX. This is it's more like HVF, I would say, because it's using a high-level API to create VMs under Windows. Yeah. So this one is MSHV is a Linux driver. So like the root partition is on Linux. This is the difference. It uses like VHPX, I think, can do live migration and certain other aspects that you can do in MSHV. It's a bit more high level. Not so far, because like VMbus is essentially like a Windows technology, and the host, in quotes, is Linux, and so like, and the workloads we are expecting is mostly Word.io, and like guests, Windows guests, for example, would install Word.io drivers. But yeah, maybe in the future this would be extended. There's one more question.
Just sake of curiosity, for the hard reproduced bugs, do you consider using a snapshot again, a kind of time machine?
Yeah. So for the hard to reproduce bugs, whether I consider snapshotting to a machine, I mean, what I have this on a slide quickly. So what I ended up with essentially writing also my own debugger workloads, which ignore. Like there's no OS, it's like bare metal x86 program that start very simple, and then you start adding features, MSRs, etc., and then you see what breaks. And this has been like very useful. So I've been using one Rust tool library, Ratatouille, which you can create this stuff like serial console programs on bare metal easily. This was one of the more fun aspects of this work. Okay, I don't see any other question. Then I think we're good. Thanks a lot for attending.
Thank you.